This is 4:55 on November 2nd. Okay, so going over the exam. So question one, most people did pretty well. 25 bits in the subnet part, 7 bits in the host part. 137 is bigger than 127, so in part C, the at host address given there is not on the same network. It's on the next higher network. Purpose of DHCP, everybody who knew what DHCP was did fine on this, I think. But DHCP is not NAT, and it's not DNS. So that's the main thing. Question three, congestion control. So 24,000 bytes is how big the window needs to be. That's the product of the bandwidth and the delay, so-called bandwidth delay product. I wasn't quite sure why people favored doing it with the number of bits rather than the number of bytes. That just seemed like extra work to me, but that's fine. Got right answers either way. Some people divided where they should have multiplied, but apart from that, that was pretty good. Okay, part B was where there was some confusion, I think. So the idea of the round, now think about what the round trip time estimate is used for. I think, you know, if you get confused and sort of think about it in the abstract, you say things like, if it's too small, or if it's too large, you pump too much data into the network. Well, that's not what the round trip time estimate is used for. Yes, if it were larger, you would pump more data into the network, but if the round trip time were actually larger, you would pump more data into the network. But that's not what the round trip time estimate is used for. It's used to set up the timeouts, right? And the idea is that if you get timeouts too frequently, that is when an ACK is about to come, then you retransmit too often. Okay? It isn't that you're sort of pumping more data out all the time. It's that the timeouts happen too often. And similarly, if the timeout estimate is too large, the round trip time estimate is too large, then the timeouts don't happen soon enough, and you sit there with an idle link when you could have been sending something and recovering from a lost packet. So there was some confusion there, I thought. Okay, so question C, the slow start doubles the congestion window every round trip time. Right? It doesn't add one MSS every round trip time, it doubles it every round trip time when you're in slow start. When you're in collision avoidance, indeed, it increases by one MSS every round trip time. So, sort of based on mistakes in part A, modulo mistakes in part A, the right answer here was 4, recognizing that you started out with 2,000. And so, after one round trip time, it would be 4,000. Some people wrote 5, and I gave full credit for that because everybody who did that explained how you got 5, and it was just an off by one error at the beginning. So that was okay. Part D, the idea here is that the receiver's flow control window is smaller than the delay bandwidth product, so the sender can't actually use all of the available bandwidth. There's again some confusion here about the difference between flow control and congestion control. The idea in TCP is that you're limited by the smaller of those two. It isn't that the flow control somehow changes the congestion control, but rather the sender is limited by the smaller of the two. And if you connect, if you add another sender, then the available bandwidth is half, and the congestion control now becomes the limiting factor rather than the flow control. Okay? Most everybody did very well on part four. I don't really want to go, or question four, I don't really want to go over it. If you didn't do okay on question four and don't understand why, come see me. So that's fine. I think everybody did just fine on question five, modulo a couple of small mistakes that got very small numbers of points taken off. Question six, the advantage of spanning tree broadcast over reverse path forwarding. The advantage, so some of you need to sort of sharpen up your ability to write clear answers would be the first thing I want to say here. The advantage is that with spanning tree based broadcast, every node receives exactly one copy of the broadcast, whereas with reverse path forwarding, some nodes are likely to receive multiple copies. Okay. But there's no circularity involved in either one. Okay. And don't get confused with sort of the generic idea of flooding, which is the generic idea behind reverse path forwarding. It's a flooding algorithm, whereas spanning tree is not. Okay. Generally, pretty well done. Question seven, parity. Most everybody did fine on this. A few people gave me odd parity instead of even parity, which was strange. And a few people had what seemed like random numbers written in for the parity bits, and so I couldn't make head nor tail out of why that was. And if you were one of those people and there was a rational reason behind it, you might want to come see me and explain what you were thinking, and you might get some points back. But I couldn't detect it, so I couldn't give points. question eight. So the thing I was looking for here, and again, the quality of the answers, even if they got full credit, was not exactly what I was looking for as a crisp explanation. Carrier sensing is the idea of listen before you transmit. Right? You see if somebody's already sending before you start transmitting. Collision detection is the behavior of somebody who is transmitting, who hears somebody start up, and then silences himself, basically. And so that's it. And so it's not about the receivers. The receivers are going to see the collisions in the form of garbled packets. There's sort of nothing very interesting about that. You don't have to do anything at all to have the receivers do collision detection of that kind, right? The packets will be garbled. They won't work. But collision detection, as we use it in networking, is meant to mean that transmitters, when they hear somebody else start up, stop. Okay. So that you can sort of recover from the collision and get good use out of the available bandwidth. Why are CSMA CD techniques far less relevant for today's Ethernets? Because today's Ethernets mostly use switching, so that there are no collisions in that environment. Okay, any questions about this? So I just encourage you to sort of sharpen your ability to write sentences that answer questions. That would be a good thing. You're mostly seniors. You're not going to take very many more exams before you leave here. But this is a great skill to have for your professional writing. So that's what I would encourage most of you who did well. All right. Give this back to Vic so it doesn't get lost. Yeah, just hold on to those till the end of class. Okay. As you noticed, I hope I sent email saying let's delay the due date for the project to Friday. I didn't, I think, change the website yet to say that. I was sort of somewhat confined into what I could do as far as changing stuff. But so Friday, and I don't remember, it's probably midnight, right? That's what it should be. So Friday midnight. So I want to take this opportunity to say, are there any questions about the project now that you've had a non-exam studying weekend to look at it? How's it going? Does it work? What?
Getting there.
Anybody stuck on anything? This is your chance. There may be. Yeah, go ahead, Jess.
What do you mean by output file? You talk about an output file.
An output file.
I wasn't sure what that was.
Okay, I'm not either. do we know the context in which it was said? Okay. I probably just mean standard out. But let's see what I said. Get a network connection here. While that's working, I can do the next thing, which is get the display set up. Okay, where is it? This one. Ah, that's it there. Okay, so the idea is just redirect your standard output into a file so that we can see what it does when it's running. I think that's. Does it say output file anywhere? Progress with the output in file output. Yeah, okay. Yep, that's all I had in mind. When you. In a shell, you run your program and. You say, okay. So you'll want to run it a few times first to make sure that it's doing what you expect it to do, and then do one run that does that. Okay? That's that. What else? Yeah.
I'm not really sure that I'm doing the project right, like I'm doing it, but
okay.
Like I just from the instructions, like I have a bunch of clients that talk to each other, and then I have a client that can send commands to these other clients. So is that the direction I should be going?
Well, they're not really clients. They're programs, right? Yeah. Several processes, each started independently, and they start sending messages to each other. That's. Okay. So Vic finished up chapter 5 on Friday, it was, and so that was PPP and MPLS mainly. Here's what I'm intending for the rest of the semester. We're about two-thirds of the way through the semester. There's about one-third to go. And we'll have a final exam. Do we have a third exam? The thought would be that we have a third exam, third in-class exam in the next to last week of class, because we can't have it during the last week of class because that's dead week. And then the final exam becomes optional. Okay, and you can use the final exam to replace the score of one of your other exams. Okay, so that's what I'm thinking now for exams. That this class breaks up nicely into thirds and gives you a second chance at things. So the final optional final will be comprehensive, touching on everything, but you don't have to take it if you're happy with your existing exam scores. Okay, so we are going to do now chapter 6, which has to do with mobile networks, and I need to adjust something here. Okay, so 9 years ago when I left Xerox PARC, wireless networking, Wi-Fi sort of networking, was established but not wildly popular. So we supported Wi-Fi networking in the building. It was still... we'll call it experimental, but it was edgy as to whether it worked or not in any given situation. Today, wireless networking is pervasive. We expect to find it most anywhere you go. On my travels, in airports, often there was free Wi-Fi, or you could sign up for a service and paying $10 a month to go anywhere that service worked. At the other university where I was working, they had Wi-Fi sort of everywhere you went. We had that at WSU. In the hotels, often now you find that the rooms have Wi-Fi service. They don't have wired service. That was true in one of the hotels I was at, and in the other one it had wired service. So wireless is sort of everywhere, and The basics that we've talked about throughout the class still apply. We're still talking about the stacked protocols, the OSI model, or the IP model of application, transport, network, link, physical, all that stuff. But wireless poses a couple of different sort of challenges. One is that the physical links are much less reliable than typical wired links are. And the other is that wireless induces the possibility of mobility, right? That you can move around while connected to the network, and you sort of expect the network to follow you as you go, right? So those are the two big things that I see wireless as posing as a difference. The other thing that also then crops up today in wireless that sort of used to be a problem in wired but isn't so much anymore is that wireless truly is a broadcast medium. And so anybody can hear the radio signals that are being sent associated with the networking. And so security comes back in as a sort of major consideration when you do wireless, that people have sort of ignored a little bit in the wired world some aspects, although I don't think you really can do that either. So anyway. So we're going to talk about the physical characteristics of these different kinds of links. There's a section on CDMA that I'm not going to talk about today, but we'll come back to it. I don't feel that I'm prepared to do it justice quite yet, but we'll come there. We'll talk about the wireless LANs. Because that's what we're most familiar with and we see most as computer scientists. But then we'll also talk about the access to the internet over cellular telephone links, which is getting to be a bigger and bigger thing. The iPhone, the Google Android, and stuff like that is really promoting the idea that the device that you carry around with you all the time should be able to have internet access over the cellular network, in addition to or maybe instead of having Wi-Fi capabilities. Okay, then issues of mobility and how that gets done, and then we'll be done. So that's wireless. We have yet to do security and what else? Two more chapters. Yeah, there are two more significant chapters, so I'm forgetting something. Oh well, we'll find out when we get there. I think we sort of all know this from using wireless networks, but maybe let's put a bit more formal words to it. When we're using wireless networks for IP access or internet access, what we're typically doing is using devices that connect into the wired network infrastructure through what are called base stations. I think the next slide shows that better. The base stations may connect directly into the network infrastructure using wired or wireless technology. Okay? And they act sometimes like routers and sometimes like switches. Okay? Sort of depending on how they're configured and where they're placed. They can be either one. They can be like a router or like a switch. Now, what's the difference between a router and a switch? Let's review that.
A router has a router.
Well, a router has a routing table. Which layer is associated with each of them? And I'm not talking about hands. Never mind. Which network layer is associated with routing? Network layer, right? Which layer is associated with switching? Link layer, yes. Okay? So you can have base stations that sort of connect in to the network infrastructure at the link layer, or you can have them that connect in at the network layer. Just a configuration option. What we don't show used as backbone, wireless can be used as backbone links. You can have remote locations that well, this is interesting. I guess we don't do that today. no ink today. It's appearing lower. Oh, it's down here. All right. I know what that means. we'll worry about that later. You can have points in the network infrastructure that are themselves connected by wireless links. But that's pretty much transparent to those of us who live out at the edges. So lots of different wireless link standards. The 802.11 family is basically what we know as wireless cards for PCs. 802.11b was the first one that was really popular. There was something called 11a that came a little earlier. It never got popular and got replaced by something called G. And today the rage is 802.11n, which claims link speeds up to 200 megabits per second, although you have to sort of take all of these numbers about data rates with a grain of salt, because there is lots of overhead associated with these protocols toward making them sufficiently reliable that you get anything useful done. So lots of errors can occur, and we'll see that here in a second. Um, 3G cellular is getting up there in speed. WiMAX is supposedly the coming thing. Gives a wide area wireless connection at fairly decent speed. And you can use the 802.11 stuff in a point-to-point configuration that also is fairly fast and fairly long range. So that's all that this picture is saying. More interesting is, well, we'll get there. The more interesting question is, why are things the way they are? And we'll get there. So bear with me a moment here. One issue that you would like to have be true is that you can wander around with your mobile network, with your mobile device. And certainly with cell phones, this is a big deal. You know, you're driving with your cell phone, you're driving over many miles, you're going to pass through many different cell tower areas, and there has to be some sort of handoff between those towers as you go. Walking around with laptops, this is less widely supported. I know the WSU wireless network now, the one called WSU Wireless, is supposed to support mobility of PCs. I say supposed to because it hasn't worked very well for me. But the previous version of WSU's wireless network did not do that, and every time you moved from one base station to another base station, you had to reestablish the connection. Another way to use wireless networks is in what is so-called ad hoc mode. This is the name that's used for it's actually the name that's used in the Wi-Fi space. If you have a bunch of PCs all with wireless capability, they can organize themselves into a network and just talk to each other without any base station and without any other connection to the internet. You can also do things, and I'm gonna draw it in the wrong point. Maybe if I draw it up here. Yeah. No. Well, anyway, some node here actually could have a connection to the internet just as an ordinary PC and act as a router to forward packets from an ad hoc network into the broader internet. But at the wireless layer, there are differences in behavior of a base station compared with an ad hoc node that's acting in that way. It's sort of at the radio level, the behavior is different. That's a little confusing. Okay, just some organization here. If there's no base station like this, we call it an ad hoc network or a no infrastructure network. If there is a base station, we say it's an infrastructure network. And the usual way that we see both of these kinds of networks being used, or that I see it anyway, is that there's a single radio wireless hop involved. We connect to the base station, my laptop connects to the base station, and the radio goes back and forth between the laptop and the base station. You can conceive of having situations where there is a base station and a bunch of laptops like in this room, and maybe only one of the laptops connects to the base station and the others have to sort of route around till you get to the one that is connected, all right, amongst the laptops in the room. That would be a multiple hop situation called a mesh network. And this kind of this is not very popular for PC networking these days, although there are some interesting experiments that have done of providing sort of community-wide internet service using mesh networking like this. The other use, the non-infrastructure use of multiple hop networks is often in sensor nets. You deploy a whole bunch of little computers over an area of space and of ground, and they talk to each other to report sensor readings and so forth. And in that case, again, the traffic is having to go from one sensor node to another sensor node to another sensor node till it ultimately reaches the place where it might be recorded. So plenty of problems here. You get into this space and things get really crazy because you've got all these nodes trying to send to each other at the same time in order to just deliver the packets to where they got to go. In the single hop case, you, especially with a base station involved, you've got somebody who can coordinate the use of the space and say, it's your turn, it's your turn, it's your turn, say. Okay. So, physical differences that actually affect the way the algorithms get written to do the coordination for use of the wireless links. Signal strength. You broadcast. You remember the the formula for signal strength from physics, right? If you have a certain power of signal at the origin, the signal strength at distance A is what? It's four times the signal strength at distance 2A. Right? There's a quadratic relationship. So the signal strength drops off very, very quickly in a typical wireless situation. You can do some things with directional antennas and the like to reduce that, but still, that's the typical behavior. Compare that with loss in a wire that's linear with the distance along the wire, and also much less attenuation per foot, typically. So that means that typically the wireless receivers have to be very sensitive, and that increases their problems with the next item here, which is interference from other sources. The 802.11 B, G, and N stuff all runs in a frequency band on the radio that's also used by telephones and microwave ovens and all kinds of other stuff. It's a popular band to use for stuff like that because it doesn't have to be, each device using it doesn't have to be licensed, but that means that all the devices have to tolerate interference from all the rest. Okay, so you have to take steps to fix that. And finally, another reality of radio is that, especially at frequencies like these, is that signals will travel directly from the sender to the receiver, but they will also bounce off of things. Okay? And when they bounce off of things, they arrive at different times because they travel longer paths when they bounce off of, say, the board. And that means that they actually are self-interfering. So the receivers and the sort of physical layer protocols have to be designed with that possibility taken into account. So it's you begin to understand why wireless has been a relative latecomer to the networking world. There was the Aloha Net in the 70s. It was very special purpose. It didn't ever become something that was widely used, installed for a particular purpose at a particular location. But beginning in the mid-90s, this stuff has gotten worked out, and the signal processing chips that are available now to deal with all this stuff is a big enabler for wireless networking. Okay, so just a bit of terminology that you may hear from time to time. Signal-to-noise ratio is when you have a radio signal or any other kind of signal, it's the amount of information content in what you hear versus the amount of noise in what you hear. So if you remember when we had the other projector in here, well, actually a better case was that, remember the day that the air conditioning was so loud, right? Remember that day? Okay. And so there's this noise filling the room, and I have to talk louder so that the signal-to-noise ratio gets higher, right? When the noise gets too much, I have to put more energy into the signal for you to be able to understand it. Okay, so large signal-to-noise ratio makes it easier to extract the signal from the noise because the noise is a much smaller piece of what you're hearing. And in computer networks, the thing we really care about ultimately is the bit error rate. Right? we're operating here. My talking is sort of an analog process, but in the digital world, we care about the bit error rate and how many good bits do we get out of the signal versus how many bad bits. And the higher the signal to noise ratio, the lower the bit error rate. Okay. So what this diagram is showing is sort of different schemes for sending bits on a channel. And you see that the different schemes have different bit error rate behavior with respect to signal to noise ratio. So what you have a choice, right? The bit error rate causes you to receive bad packets. Well, it causes you to receive packets with bad bits in them. And some fraction of them. So, you know, here, I don't know, 10 to the minus, these are negative exponents. So, as you have a larger signal to noise ratio, you get a lower bit error rate. Now, the protocols that we talked about, the error correction protocols that we talked about in the last chapter, are able to deal with those bit errors, provided you send more total bits. Okay? So there's this trade-off between signal-to-noise ratio and bit error rate that can be done, because if you have a high signal-to-noise, a low signal-to-noise ratio, you can send more bits and rely on the error correction algorithm. All right, so you got to balance the two based on the ability to correct errors, which gives you a lot of choices. Okay. There's another famous problem associated with physical wireless networks that you need to know about. It's called the hidden terminal problem, and I wish I could underline it, but it won't, so I won't. So the idea here is, suppose you have three wireless nodes. A and B can communicate easily with each other. B and C could communicate easily with each other, but A and C, there's sort of no path for the signal between them. So what can happen in that case is, suppose that A and C both want to communicate with B. Well, stuff like CSMA, collision carrier sensing, doesn't work because A can't hear anything C is doing. So it sends its signal. C sends its signal at the same time. As far as B is concerned, here in the middle, it just gets noise. Right? There is a collision at B, but A and C can't detect that. Can't do carrier sensing. They can't do collision detection. So this is called the hidden terminal problem, because, say, C and A can't see each other, but B suffers from that behavior. Okay, like I said, I'm going to not talk about CDMA here this time. We'll come back to that. And actually, I'm not going to talk about this either, because the class is over. So we'll plan then that we'll start with CDMA next time and just go on from there. Worked out well. Yeah, I'll keep these.
All right. Did you get the slides?
Yes. Thank you. Sounds good. Yeah, get her done. 5 o'clock or 11 o'clock?
11.
Ah, too bad. Sorry. Hi, Denver.
The reason why I know it's so random was that I was actually doing the if the number itself was not.
Okay. Well, then you got the right score for it.
Yeah.
Okay. No, all right.
The same.
Okay.
But and then I was wondering if for ML, if I'm confused about pattern matching with
on the arguments
on data types.
Uh huh.
Yeah. So if we, can we do an example on that?
Sure. Yeah. Sorry. Just remind me. Let me put those down. Hi.
I have a question. Can I get some partial credit for this question? I at least mentioned about timeout.
But it's backwards.
Backwards?
I mean, when the RTT is too low, you get timeouts too soon.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Like, you wrote connected with links to spanning tree. The sentence starts out within a spanning tree.
The packet is sent to all neighbors in the origin. Oh, so it was not taken off for that. That was just a clarification. Oh. It was taken off for this.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Because this is just not reverse path. This is just general.
Right, I just wanted to check that it wasn't.
Yeah. No, it's not that.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Are you going to be around this afternoon?
I am.
Okay. I can probably come.
Okay.
Then, but I can show you what I was trying to do.
Okay.
Here, I can increase this a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I had in mind.
Okay. Yeah.
Did you try it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm still, for some reason, it's not.
Okay.
Still, so I.
Okay, come in. It's. Yeah, I don't know what's happening, but.
Okay. Okay.
We'll have to see the error messages.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Hello.
Uh-huh. First of all, what do I do with this homework that I'm supposed to give you the Wednesday I was leaving for the conference? Because I never put another book that day, and then you were not in the office.
Oh, you can just give it to me. Yeah, you can just give it to me. Thank you.
Okay. So, and that second thing, I have one question that's kind of related to the concern, because there was one question I didn't know what to say, because I think I didn't. I don't understand what you asked. But anyway, you know, maybe I'm missing the lectures. One question was when you had two types. One was like data type was somewhat like a nums in struct.
Mm-hmm.
Another one was like structs in C, which was a type.
Mm-hmm.
And the question was, what is the difference? Now, the first question was, what kind of entities are those?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really sure what you mean.
So with the data type, what you have is a constructor, and you're building a whole new type that doesn't exist before you do that. The type declaration is just a renaming of a type that already exists.
Okay. So I didn't know. I missed that.
Yeah, that was it.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
One more question.
Sure.
In the homework, there's one thing to identify whether or not the thing is an int. In right now, you know, it's ML.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There is any trick to do that?
So, this is in the one where you're doing the either tree?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So remember. If I understand right, this is
in an either tree.
Yeah. So it's an indoor string.
It's an indoor string.
Yeah, but it's a tree.
Okay, so think about it this way.
Okay.
An either tree is a tree that contains some nodes and some interior nodes and some leaves.
Yes.
Okay. The interior nodes have other either trees as their children.
Yes, right.
And the leaves contain eithers.
Okay.
And so how do you make an either out of an int? You wrap the int constructor around the int, and then you have an either.
Okay.
Yeah. Does that
good.
Is that?
Yeah. All right.
What the? I'm making sure I understood the question right.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody else had this question too.
Yeah, because I was thinking there's a bit of a trick there.
No, it's really just straightforward types in the way that you expect. You can't put an int in an either tree because an either tree contains ethers.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm still thinking in terms of C, you know.
Right, and faking it and other things, which we're not allowed to do.
Yeah.